continues as a tax purpose. The property that I'm living on today, 136 acres, this was my dad's original farm. And this my brother will tell you, I'll come there in 1878. But I wanted to mention this because Mrs. Mark was the teacher in Dillon. And I asked you if you would tell us, how much did you receive when you were a teacher in District 22?
I think it was $70.
$70?
And then in the third and fourth grade, when I taught the first and second, I think I got 75, so that's supposed to be more than that.
We'll just pick a year. I just happened to see this. This is was paid by Thomas Schoolcraft to the sheriff in Hilton, J.W. Sewell. Many of you, I think, remember that name. And this is, it says here, 136 acres, part of the W.O. Gibson Village Landfill. 136 acres. The total tax for the year was $17.84. You might be interested in knowing now that on that same acreage, it's $17.84 an acre. And school district number 10, the tax was $1.10. And that's why you got $10.
Well, that was $10 more than I'd gotten before out there.
Growth district number 15, which was the village, was $2.40. And then county and state taxes were $14.24. The total was $17.24. I just talked to you. What year was that? Right. Oh, this happened to be 1903. All right. In 1899, the taxes were $35.19. Shows that they were going down. Let's pick 19, let's pick another one here. Here's 1904. Now the taxes between 1903 and 1904, this school district number 10 went to $8.64. The taxes for that year was $40.38. And you can take these receipts and just go right through it, and you can see how it just kept going up. Now, the school district tax on that 136 acres should be possibly $12. How much?
They're getting more than $70.
Well, that's it. I just I have all of these here, and these names of Sewell and then J.W. Connell. I suppose some of you remember Connell. Now, I'd like to introduce my brother. He has these, I think, very interesting letters written by one man to the family.
Remember the incident?
Boy, yeah. I have four letters here. Three of them dated in 1878 and one of them in 1888. These were written by my father to his family in Iowa. He came out here as a young man, he was 20 years old. And he was born in Arkwright, Ontario, Canada, in February of 1858. He would be 7 years old at the end of the Civil War. Now,
They moved, his family moved from Arkwright to Iowa. They were farmers. And he was one of 12 children, and I'm sure that they saw hard times. And so he no doubt left the family to come and seek his fortune, so to speak, in the West. That was about the time Horace Greeley said, "Go west, young man, go west." Now, this first letter is written from Portland. It's dated April 11th, 1878. "To the folks at home, I write these few lines to let you know where I am at present. I landed in Portland this morning after a rough voyage on the seas. We were about 5 days on the water, which if it had been fair weather, would have taken but 2.5 days. Now, he doesn't say where he came from, but I figure he came from San Francisco, because the railroad was built then, the Union Pacific, had tied in, and they had come from Omaha to San Francisco. So I think, no doubt, he came up from San Francisco by boat. Notwithstanding the roughness of the sea, I had a very good time of it, as I had had the very best of health all the way. There was not 15 out of 500 on board the vessel that was not seasick. My ride on the boat cost me nothing. I had not been in Portland, Oregon, more than 25 minutes before I hired to a man for $25 a month, so I think I was pretty fortunate about work. It is about 30 miles from Portland, so no more at present. Write soon and tell me how you all are getting along. Address, Gaston, Post Office, Washington County, Oregon." So there you are. That's probably when he first saw this country out here. Now, on May 3rd, 1 month later, in 1878, "To the friends at home, I now write to let you know that I am well, and wishing you all the same. Since I last wrote to you, I have traveled about 300 miles on foot, and alone most of the way. It was about 150 miles across the Cascade Mountains, but the rest of the way was probably prairie, was mostly prairie." Now, I think his mileage was really good, because I don't think he walked 300 miles to go across the Cascade. But it may have thought it was walking. "This is a great sheep place. I could have got $30 per month to herd sheep, but I thought I would not like the business, so I'm now working in a steam sawmill for $40 per month. I have been here only 4 days. I think I will like the work very well and the man I am working for. It has been a very cold spring here. We have had a little snowstorm here yesterday in the mountains. I had a very pleasant trip, only a little lonesome, as the houses were about 25 or 30 miles apart, and nothing but a footpath through the mountains. I expect my letters will be few, as I'm about 30 miles from town. My best respects to you all. Write soon. Address, Heppner Post Office, Umatilla, Y-U-M-A-T-I-L-L-A. That's the way he spelled Umatilla. Now this was, of course, before the formation of Marl County, because Heppner is the county seat of Marl County. So at that time, there was no Marl County. I don't know when Marl County was formed. Now, that was in May of 1878. Here's a letter dated July 28, 1878. And the address was Heppner, Umatilla County. "Dear friend, it is with pleasure that I now lift my pen." I like this. That was the style then. I now lift my pen to let you know that I received your letter yesterday, hoping when these few lines come to hand, they will find you all well as they leave me. I was glad that you were all well. I am still working in the song. They don't think they will run over 2 or 3 months longer. I never lost a day till the 1st of July when the Indian War broke out, which stopped the mill for 2 weeks. I have $75 coming to you now. The Indians done considerable devilment around here. They have been almost all around here. They have been on the north, south, and east, but did not come here. They stole about 1,500 horses from the whites. They have killed a good many men around here in the last month. They killed everyone they met and burnt everything as they went along. They had a fight with the soldiers in Whitcomb Forest. Old Howard had a fight with them. Now, Old Howard was a Civil War general, and he was the man that was sent west after the Civil War to put down the Indian uprising. And the Nez Perce War was just the year before 78. In 1877 is when Howard took after Chief Joseph and chased him over into Montana, and Chief Joseph surrendered it to, in the Bear Paw Mountains over there. General Howard was a Civil War general, and he was assigned to the Columbia Division of the U.S. Army here to handle the Indian uprisings and bring an end to this Indian wars in the West. And this Nez Perce War was the last big Indian uprising. Well, that's another question. Old Howard had a fight with them and killed 75 or 80 of their number. Howard's loss was but 4 killed and 13 wounded. This fight took place 25 miles from here. They then started to the Columbia with the stolen horses to try to cross. But the volunteers and the gunboat took over. But the volunteers and a gunboat overtook them there and killed a good many of them and got some of the horses back. We suppose there were about 1,000 warriors to the bank besides parts of the attack. They burned a sawmill 15 miles from here. The road they started on runs right close to this mill. But when they got about 20 miles from here, the soldiers got too close to them, so they flew to the rougher parts of the mountain. The folks all left the mill but myself and 3 others who stayed to watch the mill. We had a splendid time. We did not have anything to do but put our grub and scout around a little to see if there was any Indians around. I guess the danger is all over now, unless the warmth of the Indians break out that they were expected to a short time ago. The others have all left this part of the country. They were about 75 miles from here in the last week. I thought I would join the soldiers, but could not get a gun. I think I will herd sheep this month. I can get $33.30 per month, or $420 a year. I am going to try to get a van of my own as soon as I can if I stay here. Right? Soon from what you were all doing. Well, I thought about this thing. There he was, garden sawmill, how are you doing? he couldn't join the volunteers because he didn't have a gun. Well, I've read the history of the Nez Perce War, and volunteers are not very good. They said that volunteers caused them more trouble because they were men who were adventurous, and they thought, well, we'll go out and shoot an Indian or two. But when the chips were down, they weren't there to fight the regular army. Now, 10 years later, February 29, 1888. Dear friends and brothers, this is called by your sister, this is brothers. Dear friends and brothers.
You know about this. With pleasure, I now take this opportunity of talking to you by way of letter, hoping when these two lines come to hand, they may find you and the rest all well within reason. At the present time, George Child and myself have been stopping in the mountains to the point I don't know who George Child is, probably a friend or maybe somebody from Iowa. John Wayne has been herding sheep. George and I have been down to see him. He saved his life. He's getting $420 a year. We have had some pretty cold weather after this month. It's 23 below zero. I have had an easy time this winter. I have not done much but hunt and have not hurt myself at that. I have not made up my mind what I will do this summer. I was over to my farm last fall and got my work done. Now my farm is the one that's out here. He's in the 10 years, he's gone into the sheep business, partially, and then he came down here to the Palatine Valley and bought this farm. The railroad runs, or is going to run, within 15 miles of it. There was another line to pay about 4 miles of it. I am not sure if it will go there or not. The other one they are working on now. The longer I stay here, the better I like. This is the country. He likes the country. I don't like the way I have to live very well. It's too much like a dog's house back here. I have not seen more than two or three girls or women all winter. There is no better place than right here for a young man to get a start. This is in his morning. I'm going to put my money in horses. I have got 5 head already. I would have had 2 or 3 more, but fall before last. I took a ramble over to the Utah and Idaho territory and spent what I made through the summer. But the land I got is worth far more than I spent while I was running around. There is not more than 5 acres on the 160, but what is good plowing land. The soil is black and rich as it can be. We raised 65 bushels of wheat and acre close to my place. I believe that is all the news. I hope you will remember. Well, he did go in sheep business in a big way. And he raised sheep from Harleyville on the Columbia, south into the Blue Mountains. And in 1903, he sold out the sheep business in Harleyville and moved out to there. We have other letters. He was married in 1903. And I have another letter at home that we've got a lot for us. He's been to Portland and ordered his wedding. It's half square and half round. I couldn't figure out for a long time what a half square and half round suit. But it was the latest stop. It didn't have a table. The time it came down, you know, about to me, it was not square, it wasn't round. So, this isn't an accounting of the people that are still around and visiting with each other, but it is an accounting of one man who came west and what he did to get started. And we know that he later had property in Canada, and he was apparently always looking for land. He died when I was 10 years old. I didn't know him. I can't remember him hardly at all. But these are the only things that we have left that indicate what he was like. There may be people here in the room who remember him better than I do. I imagine Clara does. I can remember him as a man with a big walrus mustache, and that was about all.
He was tall.
So this is the way people came west. I guess they came looking for land. It was going west. I believe that's all I have to say. Thank you.
In August of 1906, my parents purchased 180 acres of land about a mile and a half south of Dilley. And most of this was the former donation land claim of Joseph B. Stewart, who got the land in 1873. U.S. Grant signed the original document, and I have it. Part of it. I was 3 years old then, so from then on, I have some very vivid memories. As sometime in the next summer, my mother went somewhere on the train. I buried it waiting for her return, and late in the afternoon, my father found me asleep in the brush about halfway down the hill. I was looking for Mama. Whether it was, and I remember worrying about where my mother was at 3 years old. I remember looking for her then. Whether it was that day or another, my mother was on a train that derailed near the Hughes place. It was a trestle back of the Hughes home, and Mother didn't come to Dilley when she was supposed to go on the train. Everybody got worried. They found out that the train was derailed over there. I guess no one was hurt, but there sure was excitement in the town. When I was turning 6, school was an exciting dream. But I didn't go that year. I only learned last month that a decree had gone out that no child should go to Dilley School in September of 1909 if the birthday was after the 1st of September because of the lack of space. There were two portables, I think. Anyway, there were two small buildings, I believe, that were used for school until the new building of 4 rooms could be completed. For some reason, maybe the construction, anyway, my entry into Dilley School was not until 1911. My folks told me I couldn't walk that distance alone and had to wait until Amos Martin could go to school too. His birthday is after the 1st also. Amos is sitting back there too. In the previous year, the truant officer came to our house at least twice. And I remember in that time also writing notes to Miss Hillary and heckling Clara Martin to take them to her. Clara always indignantly told me Miss Hillary couldn't read those notes, scribbles. Agnes Hillary was the first and second grade teacher. School years in Dilley were mostly very happy ones. Sometimes we were allowed to go down to the town at noon, and Josie Bryant, the station master, was always very friendly. She weighed us on the depot scales, and I was shocked at Ruth's weight compared to mine. She was a year younger, and she weighed 50 pounds more. On the way to the depot, we passed Anna Hansen's home, I think Anna lived in near Friends at the time. At least I have a picture of her living somewhere in there. And then across the road was Grandma Hubbard, Glenn Edwin's grandmother. Trains were always exciting, whether watching or riding them. And Lord was always the magic word. At the depot, turning right, the Dilley store, run by the Briggs family. Abner's home was across the road. Vermilia's blacksmith shop, where the men and boys seemed to congregate, was on the same side of the street as Briggs' store. The store was fascinating to me. Just about anything could be found in it. Way upstairs, we could try on boots and shoes. sold or traded eggs and butter for other goods. My mother did. I know. Because I have to churn the butter. And the candy jars. Those big candy jars with the rock candy in them and rock. Oh. There were horse collars and harnesses and many things for farm people as well as town in this store. And across from the blacksmith shop was Judge Stevens' home. Wasn't he in the legislature or something to put him on a pedestal for the rest of us? It seemed to me he was somebody special. Anyway, I remember Judge Stevens. Oh yes, and there was a beautiful Oregon maple tree by the blacksmith shop. I remember that beautiful tree. And let's see. There were trees along the street again. I don't think there are now, are there? Miss Rebecca Gray lived in a big house across from the blacksmith shop, the other way south from the blacksmith shop. We children were sometimes left with her overnight, or even nights when our folks went to meetings in Forest Grove or someplace. Miss Gray insulted me every time by insisting on braiding my hair as tight as possible when I had always vainly let it hang loose with a barrette or a big ribbon bow holding it back. I didn't protest too much, but I always took out the braids when I got to school and did it my way. Irish in me? Beyond this grave was where the pig family lived. I don't know who lived there. There's some other people lived in that house also. But anyway, I remember the pigs living there. They are the same family as the pig Paxton people in Beaverton. Then there was the Jarretts, or rather Mr. Jarrett lived there, and then he married Miss Peachum. Is that right? They lived there for quite some time. And then, across the road was the Harold Hanson home, where we spent many happy hours, and where Mr. Hanson still lives. He will be 98 years old on May 12th, and he lives alone. He used to run the threshing outfit that came to our place nearly every year. Then there was Mrs. Grundy. I think that was her name. Lived next to Hanson's, going back toward the store. A very nice elderly lady, I thought. There were many names I remember. Morris, I'm not sure how to spell it, had peacocks that roosted in the fir trees. Walter Wolf married Burl Morris. And he built a beautiful big house for her. Out our way, beyond the railroad trestle, was the Henry Gold home. He was chairman of the school board when my mother was the clerk. He was also the section boss on the railroad. And I have a book here that was given to me and signed by Mr. Gold when I graduated from 8th grade. It's a complete book of Shelley's poems. There were many names I remember. Stewart's, Wilk, Hoskins, Fuller, Legall. The Legalls lived where the Nelsons later lived, and Ethel Nelson is Mrs. Art Rose. She was a very tiny person, but she was quite talented and very ambitious. And periodically, she remodeled her home. And then remember when she built a stairway, and that was wonderful. She was always doing something with that old house. Stephen and I lived up the lane north of Martin. Now, next to us at one time was my mother's brother, John Moore, and family. Then it became the Kirby Christian place. And her parents, the Harrises, lived with them.
Below us was the Wade place, and below them on the road was the Henry Peterson place. And during the war, this may not be very nice to say, but they erected a very tall, skinny flagpole with a very tiny American flag on top of it. This was during the First World War. Tor Gaston from Peterson's lived with Paul Beck. And Mrs. Beck taught for a while in the Derry School. The Heisler place was up the hill with the Fitches, Ruth Fitch, Will taught in the Derry School too. A lot of other names up in there too. I guess they didn't have children in school though. And up our hill to the west was the Charlie and Ida Dickinson place. It was the Abbott place and the Fleming place, and I don't know who else lived there. And then farther up the hill was, and still is, the John Martin home. Amos lives there now. The same house is still there. That was so exciting to see that same old house. I slept in it once. I remember a big high social, or was it a Halloween party up at Martin's when the new barn was built. What impressed me then was that each pumpkin pie that was brought was different. Knights lived farther on at one time, and at one time the Gene Smiths and Fred Pattons lived high on the exposed hill. Fred Patton was my father's cousin. Back in the timber was the lock place, and the drive up their road was beautiful. I still have dreams with that road scene in them. I really do. Every once in a while I have a dream of that beautiful, beautiful road, and all of a sudden come out in the sunshine. It's just beautiful. It's with the horses and the buggies, and I still dream that. And Mr. Hansen had a sawmill up there at one time. I remember the lighted trains at night. This was the Southern Pacific. Floating along the flooded lowland. Red electrics looked like shiny treasure chests. And the trolleys sputtered awesomely. Now going back to town, there were many places left out in the above trip. McBride's had a general store too, but it was established later for the Briggs. It seemed that whenever the political party in power changed, the location of the post office also changed. Briggs was Republican and McBride to the Democratic. There weren't quite so many things in the McBride store as there were in the Briggs store, as I remember. There was a Grange Hall. My mother was secretary, and the Grange bought flour and sugar by the barrel and other things like feed for the cattle and so on that came in sacks. Anyway, they came in large quantities, and there was a boxcar on the siding for some time, and my mother dispensed the groceries and the feed to the members of the Grange. There was the Artisan Hall, where interesting programs were held sometimes. I had to be in a couple of them. And McBride's lived behind that hall. Many other names. Anderson, Parsons, Boyd, several families of Boyds. Crothers, Tupper, Ellis, Deathless, Goodrich, Hughes, Broderson, Pollock, Peterson, Hoare, and Saley. Hundley, Halstead, Hyatt, Kraft, there were two families of Kraft that I knew of. Forbus, of course. Van Meter, Hardebeck, Johnson, and Van Meter.
Van Meter, that's one of the Ackland girls married as Van Meter.
Oh?
I've been trying to remember that name. Thank you.
Okay.
While you're on this name, yeah, might be interested to know it. The John Ellis and his wife were children.
Oh.
And I heard on TV here where they have
celebrated their 70th birthday.
Oh my goodness. Good.
There is.
In Hillsborough?
Oh. And it was.
That's what they say. Johnson? Elizabeth? Elizabeth Johnson? Yeah, there was another Johnson too, wasn't there? Elizabeth attended Dillard School and also taught in Dillard. And Myers? He married Lyndon Myers, I think. And then the Linekers lived before the forest out across from Pollock's and Peterson's. And they gave us a ride one Sunday in their new car. And that was the first ride I ever had in a car. And Mary Lineker was such a beautiful girl. I remember the first airplane to fly down our valley. Very exciting. It didn't seem much higher than the hill that Schoolcraft lived on across the way. I also remember the three Schoolcraft boys riding one horse to school. De Schuizers lived on the same road as the Schoolcrafts. In 1919, I graduated from the 8th grade. We all were required to take state exams in all subjects then. I was told I had the highest average in Washington County. That's why this book. The Daily School Board presented me with the complete poetical works of Percy Bysshe Shelley. And before I forget, my father was the first scoutmaster in Dilly, and I don't remember who all the boys were, but I think Frank Broderson, Lawrence Anderson, and Ray Wolfe were quite sure were part of the group, but I can't remember who the others were. And I don't find any pictures in the bunch, but I do have a picture of my father as a scoutmaster. And then my mother was the Campfire Girls leader. And one summer we camped up on the old picnic grounds for several days. I don't know how long it was several days anyway. And I have a picture of Ruth Halstead, Marie Hoskins, Myrtle Peterson, Alice Peterson, Anna Hansen, Grace Hansen, Rita Pollock, Rena Wilkes, Theodora Goodrich, Josephine Goodrich, Louise Hoskins, Edith Hansen, Patty Beck, Myrtle Wolfe, and we three sisters were in the group. I may have left somebody off, but I don't think so. And Edith is here tonight, too. Edith is Mr. Hansen's daughter, Edith McGill. Stand up, Edith. And let me see, I think that's about it. But there was a very sad day. It came on about the 3rd, I think, of December in 1919, when the O'Neill family departed the state of Oregon for Milwaukee, Wisconsin. There are many instances I should have recorded, but history is made up of memories, and I'll add to them later. Like when Faye Hensley and her brother and Billy Corbus went rafting on an old clod masher and nearly drowned when they lost their oars and drifted into the current. Anybody remember that? The Hensleys lived on the Heisler place just about the time we were moving away. And Elva Borgen was another name I had. She's here tonight too. I had tried to remember. Thank goodness she was here. And I think that's about my little story.
Me?
Yes.
It was the Maddox that was fighting at that time. But yes, it was the Nez Perce that Chief Joseph was the chief of the Nez Perce.
That's right.
And that's the tribe that was driven out of Idaho, and they were seeking refuge in Canada. And they thought they were just about in Canada, and they're about 30 miles south of where. When O.O. Howard caught up with him. It was General Miles that took the surrender from the Chief Gilbert.
Oh, yes.
And, but the Bannocks, if there were any Bannocks with the Nez Perce, they were just scattered bands.
Well, there were quite a tribe of Indians that lived, well, up in Skogden Valley, really.
Oh.
Skogden.
Yeah.
Couldn't put an S on it.
Yeah.
And, but they never did any trouble.
Oh, they? No, not it. This was Eastern Oregon.
Yeah.
This is why my
problem
is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd like to make one more comment. Clara mentioned the song back of the Martin place. 2 years ago, I visited with Mr. Hanson, and we got to talking about that meal. The stumpage price at that time was $6 a thousand. He cut ties up there and got $11. Now I understand stumpage is $190, something like this. Think of it, $6, that's what he told me. $230 now? Yeah. Another thing that Clara brought back to mind with Josie Frank, the station agent. Well, it was the station agent before Josie, who was my mother, and that's the way my father met her. He raised hay on this place and brought the hay to Billy to ship. It was Timothy Hay. And Timothy Hay was raised and sold to the racehorse people. And it was shipped to Billy. If you remember, there used to be a large storage area Billy, down along the track and burned. That was, I suppose, probably 10 years old then. That's the
one Mel Johnson built?
That's right. Mel Johnson. That's the one who built. And that bird. But that's how my father happened to meet my mother. She was a station agent for the Southern Pacific.
The basketball team from Dillon always played basketball. And you told me that one
from the Yeah. Is Amos Martin here?
I remember when we used to come down deep by stilts. It wasn't so much fun. We don't really need to be in a fire stroke, but they did. And say, could you tell me where the first schoolhouse was?
I know where the big schoolhouse was, but that was about 4 or 5 rooms.
Yeah. Now that was up at the...
There was a barn, one of these two stories.
It's sitting here in the church. Well then, there was a schoolhouse built somewhere, and I've been trying to find out just where that was. If you don't remember.
No, I didn't.
Well, could you tell me where the Grange Hall was?
Yes. You know where the people were?
Yes.
Go straight east down that road towards the Trevor.
It's still there.
And it's still, yes, it's off to the right. And it's still, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
There's a picture
of it. Have to see that. There. Uh-huh. Well, I have a flag of Dillon. The original one from Dillon. It wasn't built there. It was made in town. And, I'm trying to get those houses on that. And the Grange, I understood that the Grange Hall was an old schoolhouse. Maybe I'm mistaken.
I don't know. Uh-huh. Well, look, this is the way that I remember.
Yeah.
This was me. From my mother. My mother, when I was 18, she was born in 1879, and she came to Dillon, which was 4 years late. So. And she went to the old school, the two buildings. All right. One building was moved to her. Charlie Craft. Right. Another one was
Ben
Hoskins. Ben Hoskins. They were home. Now, doesn't that true, Carol?
I think so.
Well, did you
see that? That's what I remember.
Oh, yes.
Well, Where did the school go?
Well, they were the ones where my mother went to the school.
Yes.
Well, and where they were, I was under the impression that they were on the same grounds.
I think they were on the same grounds.
Didn't you say that you saw that building being moved up the road?
Yeah, I saw the Kraft building being moved up the road.
Up the road, yeah. That's Charlie Kraft, and it's still up the road.
Oh, yes.
The same
one. Same one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hospital place is gone. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, then I think I have to put the first schoolhouse on my chart up there at the... Well, it'd be just north of the church.
Yeah. You see, our grandfather, their house is still in the building. It's still there.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. It's past the school. You know what this means.
Is that your grandfather?
Grandfather, yeah. They fixed it all up. It's the original fireplace. We had some pictures. That it would be in the 1880s.
Oh, yeah.
That's the same?
Yeah. That was your grandfather?
My grandfather. That was my mother's.
Oh, I see.
You see, my mother. Yeah. And this was Charlie Hubbard.
Yeah. But on your father's side, yes. Her grandfather never was out.
No.
But that was on the mother's
side. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
My maternal.
Yes.
Grandmother's
side. That's right. Uh-huh. I think I'll have to bring my chart to you someday and get you to put some houses on for me. Now, is there any other questions you'd like to ask? If not, we'll turn back to the press.